comes to security, everything comes down to access. Everything comes down to your identity and how you're managing it. When people are breaching systems, what are they doing? They're breaching credentials. You know what I'm saying? People are always looking for credentials or trying to elevate their access. It always any type of exploitation comes down to this. So I was like, this kind of encompasses everything. You know what I'm saying?
It's the origin. It's at the center.
Yeah, it's like if somebody's doing a pen test, what are they trying to do? They're trying to compromise and elevate their access. When you're on the blue team, what are you trying to do? Make sure people can't breach and compromise access. So
what's going on, everybody? Welcome back. It's your boy HD, and this is the Textual Talk Podcast. This is going to be, I believe, it's going to be 54, 55. And listen, don't get mad because I don't know, but I'm pre-recording some of these things. So when you watch them, I did it already. But man, this episode is great, man. We have none other than JK Spopes, and he is an IAM engineer, and that stands for Identity and Access Management. And in this episode, we talk about, you know, when he got his first computer, what he first did to how he got into tech. He took some time off from tech, then he got back in 2 years ago, you know, at a older age. And so he wants to tell people about how, like, you know, don't worry about your age when you're trying to get into IT. So this is going to be a great episode. And without further ado, let's get to it. Yo, man. So you can correct me if I'm wrong, but it's been, close to like 2 years, I think. I think when you were getting back in the game and doing some stuff on YouTube and LinkedIn as well. I could be wrong, but I think it's been close to 2 years.
Yeah,
I remember everybody when I started, what I was doing.
Yeah. It was about about 2 years, right before the pandemic.
Yeah, it's crazy. It don't seem like it's been like 2 years. It really doesn't feel like I started this YouTube and podcast in 2020. Everything been going like so fast.
Yeah, see, I thought you had started before that, man. I thought you was already rolling.
Well, so I had a boxing channel.
Okay.
But hang on. I had a boxing channel on YouTube at one point, but it really prepared me for this. Like, I still like boxing. Like, I'm actually going to watch Anthony Joshua fight today. Okay. He fights at, 4 o'clock Central Time. And I still like it, but covering it, I think, was just a waste of time. Like, it already isn't marketed correctly in America anyway. It's so many type of paywalls. It's not on regular TV like it used to be, like when my dad was growing up. So on top of competing with the same people that's doing the same content over and over again, it was really hard to get traction. And my content, I could be biased. Now, visually, it wasn't the best because I still was learning, and that's what the good part was about all that. Like, just the grind, even now, like learning how to get better. But the content was better than most of the channels, because a lot of channels were just, you know, making up lies and stuff, or trying to get deals with promoters or networks so they could get, you know, some sponsorships on their page and not tell the truth. So
yeah,
that's kind of how I felt about that.
No,
but anyways, man, you know, this is the new way to intro people. But who is JK, man? Who is JK?
Man, I'm just a tech nerd, man. I just like all things tech, you know what I'm saying? Whether it's computers or software or music tech or whatever it is, you know what I'm saying? It's just something I've been in, man, since probably about 2000. I think I bought my first computer in like 2001. So, you know, I came up, you know, I graduated high school in 2000. So computers was around, but they wasn't like, you know what I'm saying? It wasn't like it is now. You know, where, you know, cats like yourself, we all grew up with just computers was just around. That was a thing. So I remember, man, starting high school, and my mom was like, hey, you need to, you know, you need to take a typing class. I'm like, man, I ain't trying to be no secretary. I don't even know how to type. You know, it's, you know, she was just like, nah, computers is the future. So her and pops, you know, tried to get me to try all type of stuff, man. So, yeah, man, I'm just somebody that likes tech.
Yeah, dope, man. You know? You like the same age as I got older cousins. They graduated like in 2000. I was like, I was still a baby around that time.
Yeah. You were like 8, 9 years old that time, 2000. Yeah.
I was 8. But no, it's funny that you mentioned that about growing up with computers, because I mean, even me, I guess I, what am I? Gen, I guess I'm, I think I'm in millennials, but I know it's a certain gen that we fall into. I don't know if it's X or something or what. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know if you be Gen X or Gen Z or I don't know, man.
Yeah, I just, think Gen Z is the younger people than us for sure. Like, they're different. Like, they grew up with everything digital. Because I still grew up in a time with VHSs and cartridges.
True, true.
CD-ROMs. Like, you had to go to Hollywood Video or Blockbuster.
Yeah.
All the different stuff. Like, even, you know, and we briefly can get, like, a little bit, like, into music stuff. Like, for the listeners that, you know, it's your first time tuning in, I also have a music background. I was a church drummer for, like, 12 years. So I remember also when that sound equipment, you know, you couldn't do everything digital like you can now. Like, you can do digital and set it. Like, you couldn't do all that. It's a lot of analog.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Won a lot of, I mean, oh, that's crazy, man. You got churches now with, like, everybody got the in-ears and all the good stuff.
Yeah.
Back in the day, you had, you know, one or two monitors and you up there. Hopefully you can hear yourself in the monitor.
right. Couple dynamic microphones, couple short mics. And yeah, dang, that was it.
Man, whoever invented Shure got to be rich, man, because you see them mics on every YouTube. I'm talking about whether it's this little cheap MV7 or the real deal one, which I may get eventually. I should
the SM7. They've been around.
Then, well, it was between Shure, and then we used to have those Sennheisers.
Yeah, yeah.
Those wireless Sennheisers. So they'd be in the back, you're trying to adjust them, and then everybody's up there with the mics and seeing stuff. So
that's crazy, man. Yeah, that's funny.
Yeah, man. So where are you from,
man? I'm born and raised in Kansas, man. Midwest. Okay. Yeah, about an hour from Kansas City. I stay in Topeka, which is the capital, but everybody thinks the capital is Kansas City or somewhere else. But yeah, so yeah, man, born and raised. A lot of, for whatever reason, man, a lot of times when I meet people, they think I'm from some either West Coast or the East Coast, but nah, Midwest, man. Okay. Yeah, straight up.
So you what they are, the Jayhawks?
I mean, KU's like 20 minutes away from me in Lawrence, but I mean, you know, I'll watch them here and there, but I ain't crazy like that about them. They cool though.
Yeah, I feel you.
Yeah.
Oh man, it's dope, man. So let's talk about a little bit after. And granted, I actually do want to know, like, let's talk about after 2000, right? Like, after high school and, you know, after you graduated, a little bit, like, not too much about what you were into, but after you graduated, did you think you was going to do something with computers or what?
No, man. Like, to be honest, like, when I was in school, like I said, my parents had me trying different stuff. So I did this thing, like, junior and senior year where I went to school half the day, and then I went to a technical college half of the day, and I was in like an electronics technology course. Like, they didn't have a computer course or anything like that, so I was doing stuff like PLCs and, you know, circuit boards and all that type of stuff. So I thought I was going to kind of do something like that, and when I ended up graduating, I actually became a commercial electrician apprentice or whatever. So I was out, you know what I'm saying, doing stuff on power plants and all that high voltage and all that type of crazy stuff, man. And my wife, she wasn't too thrilled about me being around that type of stuff, you know what I'm saying? But it came to a point where I just kind of got bored of it. But like I said, in 2001 is when I bought my first computer. It was like a Compaq something, man. I bought the whole package, and you know, I was always Compaq. Yes, sir.
Everybody had Compaq computers back in the day.
Yes, indeed. I remember buying that joint from Radio Shack, man. Went home, you know, hooked it up to dial up and started, you know, just messing around with stuff. And I think from trying to keep that thing running, or you know, cleaning viruses and the normal stuff, man, just trying to upgrade it, add CD-ROMs, trying to burn CDs, all that type of stuff. I just started getting interested into computers, man. And it was probably around 2004, I think, I ended up going to like a tech school for, it was supposed to be a computer program they lied to me, man. Like, they got me into the program, and they was like, yeah, it's an electronics / computer program. So you're going to learn electronics for this, you know, this semester, and then you're going to get into computers, and you'll get into networking. So I'm thinking I'm going to get into computers, networking, and all that stuff. So it was the same type of stuff, kind of like what I did in high school, building radios and more PLC stuff. And then we end up getting into computers and building our, we did a class where we built our own computer and did A+ and, you know, all that stuff. And that's kind of when I got the bug. So I was around 2004. I got the bug for like A+, but they never end up adding the networking portion to the course. You know what I'm saying? So I did A+, yeah. And then I end up finding another school that did like, you know, Security+ and Network+ and different things like that. And yeah, that's kind of how I got into it. I think probably like 2005 is when I got my first IT job. So
nice.
Yeah, it was.
I didn't have a college. Get some gunshots to the dial up real quick.
Yeah, man.
Because Gen Z don't know that struggle about that.
Yeah,
dial-up, man. You go to the store, you get that Netscape AOL CD.
Yeah, a thousand hours. Yeah,
like, we had Netscape. What we had? We had Netscape email address and everything. Like, we calling Netscape and stuff out there. Like, the struggle I'm talking about, you know, you want to be on the computer at the house, and my mom picks us up and say, I'm trying to use the phone. So now you got to wait.
Cause we didn't really have like cell phones and stuff like that, man. So it was like, we still had a house phone. So it's like, man,
yeah.
The wife, like, you know what I'm saying? You can't be on the internet all day. You know what I'm saying?
Right. You know,
and I know my cousins trying to figure stuff out. Yeah. Go ahead.
They end up setting up my uncle ended up setting up two lines. So like the line that they use that one, and then the free line, so people could call the house phone. Because like, it's crazy. Like when I think about how slow dial up was when you were actually trying to do something on the internet, like it was crazy,
bro. It was ridiculous. I don't even understand. I don't even understand how we did it, man. You know what I'm saying? Like.
Then back then, so around the same time, well, a little bit after 04, around 2004 is when we got our first computer at the house.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had that computer all from that time all the way up to pretty much senior year in high school. And I'm the one that messed that up. I think if I go back, let me clip this. I think this will be a good story time. So in high school, I took a USB from, I put it in at our library at the school at Huntington, and I came home and plugged it in at home.
Yeah.
And I believe I ended up putting a virus on the computer.
Yeah, buddy.
it was never the same anymore after that. And I didn't know at the time. And I think this is also like, antivirus back then was kind of, you know, trash, to be honest. I mean, everybody was trying to set on different products back then. Who do we have? I don't even think we had one on the computer.
Yeah.
I don't know if we had Norton.
We're about to say Norton or McAfee.
Norton or McAfee. Them two.
Ooh,
and they didn't help anything. And so I ended up just, you know, saying goodbye to that computer and just destroying it before we put it on there. Before we put it on there for the trash people to take it, because if you don't, dumpster divers can come and get stuff off your hard drive. You don't destroy it. So you got to make sure you destroy it so they can't use it.
Yeah, I definitely think that's how I really got into computers, man, was just trying to fix viruses and, you know, messing with drivers and having hard drives get corrupted and all that type of stuff and having to fix it because, you know, I wasn't in a position to just go buy a new one. You know what I'm saying? So I had to ride that thing out. So, hey. You know, that's how you learn. But I know exactly what you mean, man. So,
yeah. And then I just, you know, this is another like story time because I'm just going back, OJ, briefly on like how like computing has changed. It's like, so now if you listen to this, you don't really have to take, honestly, I don't know when they're going to actually stop like selling flash drives. They probably don't sell them like they used to because now you can just put all your stuff. You got a Google Drive, OneDrive, Box. Yeah. What's the other one? It's a couple of other ones that have like just their own services where you can just use their stuff. And so you don't have to worry about it. Dropbox. Yep. Thank you. I can think of it. Dropbox.
All that.
Where you can just use that. And it's, you know, much more efficient. You can share it, everything. Even when it comes to, you know, back in the day, trying to, it was just a pain, especially for kids. And shout out to Google for this. Let me try to. Because I think it got popular by the time I got in college in around 2010. But it used to be a pain if you were at home on your home computer, you didn't have Microsoft Word. It was so hard to do papers. So hard to do papers and collaborate with others. But then around the time I got in school, maybe 2010, 2011, 2012, whatever, Google Docs start servicing. All these people can make ads and changes to it. So you didn't have to have some type of SharePoint, you know, like at a corporation or something like this to actually do collaborations on, you know, projects and stuff like that. And I think that's major. And the crazy thing is a lot of people still don't even know about what, like, you can use Google Docs for documents, and then you got Google Sheets for Excel, then you got their own PowerPoint stuff. Yeah.
Man, it's fun. Yeah, it's funny, man. I remember even before Google Docs, man, like early, you know, 2005, 2006, like if you didn't want to buy Office, you just use OpenOffice. You know what I'm saying?
It was I remember OpenOffice. So
I used to use OpenOffice all the time. You know what I'm saying? Because I'm like, yeah, well, you can use Microsoft at work or whatever, but I'm not trying to spend $300 on no Microsoft suite just to edit. You know what I'm saying? Just to edit a Word document or something like that. So OpenOffice to the rescue, man. It was free and it could open up all the formats. So yeah, and then I do remember when Google Docs came along, I was like, okay. That was, you know, because it was all online. It was just way easier to, like you said, collaborate and stuff like that. Send somebody a link to it and they get in there, do what they need to do. Like, yeah, they changed the game with that one.
For sure. All right, so we go to 05 is when you got your first, like, tech gig.
Yeah, man.
Let's talk about that one.
Yeah. So, you know, it was just – I had finished up, you know, one of the schools. I had like my A plus. I think I had Network plus. I was working on Security plus and MSA, MCSA, stuff like that. And I was just like, I just emailed. I looked, you know, I got online on like the city government website, looked for their IT department, found the director's email, and I just emailed him. I was like, hey, this is my name. This is what I'm doing. I didn't send a resume or nothing. I was like, hey, this is my name. This is kind of what I'm doing, what I'm studying or whatever. Just looking to see if y'all got a job. And dude was like, hey, you know, set up some time, come in. You know, we love to talk, blah, blah, blah. And that's honestly how I got my first job, man. And I remember coworkers were like, once they found that out, they was like, how did you just email them? I'm like, he's just a person. Like, if he would have said no, it wouldn't have changed my life. If you would say, yeah, you know, it's cool. Like, you just go
for
it.
Worst thing you say is no.
That's it. You know what I'm saying? I'm like, but they was just like, oh, I can't believe you did that. But yeah, that's how I got into that. So that was like a help desk, you know, job running around the city, you know, fixing computers for different government agencies and stuff like that. And from there, I kind of progressed from help desk to system admin, end up getting my MCSA and all that type of stuff. And then eventually ended that position as the network engineer. So I was managing all the switches for the city, man. So you talking about fire stations, police, you know, stations, police cars, you know. So we was doing VPN stuff inside the cars for their devices, you know, and then all like the, you know, people processing your water, all that stuff. So water plants, all that. I was managing all the switches and the fiber networks and stuff for everything. So yeah, it went from, and that was just off of an email, man. You know what I'm saying? Just like, hey, let me get a job. This is what I'm doing. And then, you know, just progress once you get in there.
Man, let me see. Let me give you this for that. Because what you did is what I tell people to do in the book. Like, you know, it's just not enough to apply and something like that. Like the fact that you even emailed him and told him about yourself really, you know, told that him a lot.
Yeah.
Versus, you know, you have to actually interview and tell me about yourself. Like, you already did kind of like the groundwork.
Yeah, because they weren't even hiring for a position. You know what I'm saying? Like, they didn't have anything listed, but I was like, let me see what's up with the city. You know what I'm saying? I figured, you know, city, it might be a good job, government job type situation, whatever. I don't know. Maybe they might need some help. So I just emailed them, and you know, they brought me in, interviewed, hired me on, and then it was, you know, that was it. It was one interview. Wasn't no whole bunch of interviews back then. You know what I'm saying? It was just, hey, here's an interview. Here's the team. How much you want to get paid? Blah, blah, blah. Let's go. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And I think for the city roles, they normally kind of will tell you on a job description kind of what the range is for the pay range.
Yeah, right? they would, but this one was, I mean, basically they
made it for you then, right?
Yeah, yeah, because they wasn't hiring. You know what I'm saying? It's like, oh, we could kind of use some help, you know, in this area, but they didn't have anything listed, so there was no job description. There was none of that. They was just like, we could use some help, you know, on the help desk, and it was more just like, it wasn't like a help desk. It was like we were service technicians. Like, we had our office, yeah, but we was always, you know, running around the city to different places. Like I said, in fire stations or in the police stations or water treatment plants, community centers, like all that stuff that you can imagine is ran by the city. You know, they got people that need to manage their equipment, you know, so it was cool, man. You know what I'm saying? They pretty much let me get in there and do whatever I wanted to do as far as what I wanted to learn and stuff like that. So I was able to quickly go from, like I said, help desk to being a network engineer. And even the network engineer, there wasn't a position for that. It was just like they had to come up with a position and write a description and, you know, put it in the matrix, you know, that whole matrix, like you said, where they had to, you know, where are we going to put this at in the matrix? Because, you know, government, they just got them steps. It don't matter what it is. Once you get a job classified as a certain thing, then it's only a certain amount of steps you can, you know what I'm saying? You know how it goes. So that's how it was, man. But it was cool.
Yeah. I mean, it's crazy, yeah, though, because you just laid out like a lot of the stuff that the city does relies on, like IT.
Yeah.
And I always think about how maybe some cities may be behind, because I know a couple of cities have gotten hit with ransomware.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And just thinking about, like, really, I don't think they really understand how, like, because I had this conversation, I think, I don't know if it was like two or three episodes back, talking about, like, the school system, how they don't really have the money to really invest in, like, proper, like, you know, network security and their own security just for – if something happens, something goes down, what, you know, happens out of schools, not thinking about the records and everything else.
Yeah, bro.
You know, and then it's even going into the city, you know, think about it, you know, somebody get in there and, hey, you know, all the lights messed up.
So that's what I'm saying. So, you know, like I said, just some of the things that people don't think about, you think about your water treatment plants, you know what I'm saying? All that stuff is ran off of technology. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. if something get in there, you know, you ain't getting clean water. You ain't get, you know, so we had servers and switches and all that stuff to run that. We had to set up, you know, servers and switches to run, like you said, the lights, the actual traffic lights, you know, there's switches in there that, you know, have to communicate. And those people got to talk about, you got the street department, you know what I'm saying? They got to come out and move your snow or do all these, you know, put your tar down, all this other stuff. All that was managed by certain technology systems. So like everything, you know, I mean, there were situations where we would have people that managed, you know, in the, say, the water department, they'd be out in the field. And, you know, that's back when, I don't know if you remember, man, but there used to be these cellular like cards, like that you stick in a laptop. They was like, man, I wish I could remember the name, but like laptops used to have big old slots on the side, and you could stick the actual cellular card in there from like Sprint or Verizon, whatever. It was a card just for the laptop. And yeah, so we had those types of things deployed, and people was getting into stuff they weren't supposed to. So we had to figure out, you know, certain stuff like VPN and, you know, all this stuff to lock things down and do different things. Like, I mean, I even wrote out a biometric system back then, bro. Like it was a lot of stuff. And then you think about like courts. So your city has courts. You know what I'm saying? So you have court systems and court documents mm-hmm. and all this different stuff. So yeah, it's a lot. That's
my record.
yeah, it's a lot. So, it's a lot,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, man. So after that networking engineer role, did you go somewhere else, or is that when you decided to do music?
Yeah, so, I mean, I, always in the background, I was, like, doing music and, you know, building up a business and stuff like that. And I did the network engineer role from, like, 2005 to about 2012. But at the time, you know, we had three kids, younger kids. So, you know, I was missing a lot of stuff. Like, I'm getting home late in the evening after they done been in school. They don't want to talk about school when I'm getting home, stuff like that. So, you know, I wanted a little bit more freedom. So, yeah, about 2012, I was just like, man, I'm going to just focus on this business. And that's when I just focused on my music tech business, where, you know, I was just, it was still technology, but it was more so dealing with audio equipment manufacturers, helping them test their products, you know, consulting on products.
I seen some of the videos when I typed your name in.
But then on the back end, you know, from the business side, I was building up my own website. So I'm still managing servers, still integrating with AWS. I built like, you know, three different membership sites where people can learn different stuff. So I'm doing IAM, you know what I'm saying, all this type of provisioning and different things like that. So I still was, you know, in IT, I still was managing that type of stuff, but it was just wasn't in a corporate situation. You know what I'm saying? It was just a little different. So I did that for, man, from 2012 to 2020, man. Like, and that's still, I still have the business, but like I said, now our kids are grown. So I was like, man, I like to try and do different things. So I'm like, man, let me see if I want to mess with some corporate IT stuff again and how I want to go about it. So I just, that's when I just got back into it. That's when I started the new YouTube channel and the website. And it was just more so just to say, hey, you know, I was what, 38 at the time. So it's like, you can start this whenever you want. For me, it's kind of like a second wind mm-hmm. on the corporate side of things. But the whole time I've been involved in tech, you know what I'm saying? Just for a span of, you know, from 2012 to 2020, it was just tech for myself and my business. You know what I'm saying? So.
Yeah, no, most definitely. And I was going to get to that. I don't know why they want to cut the grass now. But anyways, so I like that you said that you were still doing tech stuff while you technically weren't in tech. Mm-hmm. Because I deal with people that do want to pivot, and I try to show them, hey, you got some transferable skills. You've been doing some tech-related things.
For sure.
There are some things that you have a skill set for that you probably don't know will fit in a certain role, you know, in cybersecurity, in IT, and you just have to figure it out.
Yeah.
So with that being said, let's actually segue into, you know, we probably had this in a couple of questions because we don't want to just talk about it without explaining it.
Yeah.
Let's talk about what is IAM and what made you choose to niche down into IAM, you know, coming back into, you know, security.
Yeah. So, IAM, identity and access management, is basically managing who has access to what and what level of access they have. And for me, man, like kind of how I decided to niche down into that, I had to take a step back and see what it is that I really like and where my skill set was at. So honestly, like when I first jumped back into the tech world or the corporate world of IT, I made a conscious decision to join at like a kind of a help desk system admin role. And I also did that with the government as well. This time it was for the state. But my specific reason for doing that was I wanted to see what people were doing in the corporate world. I wanted to see, I feel like at a help desk, you could really learn a lot about an organization. And you can learn a lot about all the teams, because I was still, you know, I knew I had these different skills, but I was like, I don't know if I want to do network engineering anymore. You know what I'm saying? I didn't know if I wanted to be a system admin. So I figured, man, let me do this and kind of see where I wanted to go. And like I said, even during that time in that position, I got offered a network engineering position. But I was like, what they offered me, I already knew. I was like, no, that's not. We're not going to do that. You know what I'm saying? Like that salad, that ain't going to work for me. You know what I'm saying? And two, because I was able to build a business, I didn't have to move based off of, you know, just salary. You know what I'm saying? I could choose exactly what I wanted to do based on what I was interested in. And so what happened was, man, I was always interested in security. Like I said, I had done security before. I had done some rolled out some biometric systems. I was already doing IAM, you know, I was already doing file system access, all that different stuff. But you know, you get the sexy do pen testing or do this or do that. And so it's like, I was looking into some of that stuff, and even though a lot of that stuff interests me, I had to be honest with myself. What do I want to do on a day-to-day basis? Like, you know, it's cool finding breaches, and it's cool cleaning up, you know, after incidents and stuff like that. But do I really want to do that on a day-to-day basis? Like, then I had to be honest with myself. I was like, I don't know. I took an interview for like a SOC analyst position, and you know, just asking about what they did. I mean, I would do stuff like you talk about all the time. I would talk to, like, soon, probably the second week after I got in that state position, I was emailing like the network, the network team. I was emailing the security team. I would talk to them and ask them what they was doing, what type of tools they were doing, what type of skills they needed, all this different stuff, just to kind of see what they were into. And I would talk to them about stuff. So I even just took a interview with one of them for a SOC position. And they was asking me about things like Splunk and, you know, different tools and stuff like that. And I was like, oh, yeah, I mean, I've seen Splunk, but I hadn't used it at that point. And so when they did that, I was like, well, if I really want to get into some type of security, I probably need to get a few different tools under my belt. So I went and got Splunk certification, you know what I'm saying, just to learn it, to see what it was. And I was like, yeah, this is cool, but I don't know if I want to be looking at Splunk all day. You know what I'm saying? I don't know if this is something that I would want to do. So for me, you know, having the ability to just kind of try things and learn and see what I wanted to do, I took a step back and I was like, I don't know if I want to be in a SOC. I don't know that I necessarily want to be a pen tester. I was like, what do I like to do? And I had even just looked on what I like to do in my business and everything. I was like, it always came down to I am managing people and basically managing their access. So like, even when I was running my business or when I was building a business, it was like building a membership website. Had to build that from the ground up. So it's like, you have to build it, then you have to build the levels that you want people to get access to when they join and all these different stuff. That's the stuff that was interesting to me. You know what I'm saying? So it was just like, when somebody gets access to something, what level of access do they have? And how do you make sure they don't have access to more or less than they need? And for me,
access creep.
Yeah. So for me, that was the thing that excited me. So I was like, man, let me kind of niche down into this and see where this fits in security. Because for me, in my honest opinion, like when it comes to security, everything comes down to access. Everything comes down to your identity and how you're managing it. When people are breaching systems, what are they doing? They're breaching credentials. You know what I'm saying? People are always looking for credentials or trying to elevate their access. It always any type of exploitation comes down to this. So I was like, this kind of encompasses everything, you know what I'm saying?
It's the origin, it's at the center.
Yeah, it's like if somebody's doing a pen test, what are they trying to do? They're trying to compromise and elevate their access. When you're on the blue team, what are you trying to do? Make sure people can't breach and compromise access. So
it's like I am what fit in the if I'm saying this correctly, I am what fit in the confidentiality part of the CIA triad or whatever they call it, because that'd be confidentiality, right?
I mean, it honestly, it depending on what area you're in, it could cover all of them. So you think about all of them, you think about confidentiality, you think about integrity, you think about access, all of that, you know what I'm saying, it can be encompassed from an IAM standpoint. That's why I like it, because it covers so many things. Like, you get to dibble and dabble in so many areas of cybersecurity. And two, the thing that's interesting is IAM wasn't always looked at as a security thing. Like, a lot of people don't understand. That's why I want to talk about it more, because a lot of people don't understand that they're already doing IAM. Like, they may not be doing it from a security perspective, but if you're in HR and you're onboarding people and you're managing their access to, you know what I'm saying, what they get when they get onboarded and, you know, what systems they have access to, you're not even in IT, but you're doing IAM, you know what I'm saying?
And yeah, fact.
Yeah. So I think sometimes a lot of people don't look at, like you said, those transferable skills. Even if you're doing physical security, you may just be in charge of managing them fob keys that people get access to, what buildings they get access to.
That's like I said, big.
That's still part of IAM. That's still part of access. That's still use. So you can definitely transfer into those areas. The cool thing about IAM is when it gets coupled with security, those salaries raise up. You know what I'm saying? It looks a little different if you're doing IAM in a security space versus just doing IAM in HR. So I always try to talk to people like, hey, you can definitely pivot into this. You don't have to be, you know what I'm saying, you don't have to come from a network engineering background. You don't have to come from a system admin background. You don't have to come from an IT background when you're getting into IAM, because there's a lot of different areas that it covers. Like I said, whether you come from HR or physical security, building access, all these different things, it's still the same stuff. You're still deciding who gets access to what. You know, with HR, you're deciding what type of birthrights are they getting when they join, you know, all these different things. So you understand the concepts of IAM, and you can pivot that into, if you want to, you can pivot that into a cyber security career, man. And so for me, it was just like, that's what I actually enjoy. I enjoy everything about that. And so I was like, man, let me just kind of niche down into this. And I really didn't see a lot of people talking about it, because it's not sexy, but it's like you said, at the end of the day, it's the foundation of everything when it comes to security. Everything, like, everybody has to go through it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, no. That's,
yeah.
No, I was just gonna say, trust me, and like, as a person that used to work in the SOC, like, IAM is important, because, you know, if I'm looking at an alert and I see a janitor is doing something like on a computer or something that they typically wouldn't normally do, because they normally have like the bare minimum of access. That's a you know, a red flag to me, because I'm paying attention to who's doing what. That's one of the big things in my analysis. Oh, okay, this dude is an engineer and he's working with, you know, some Terraform stuff, whatever. You know, that's possibly, you know, legitimate. Let me go ask him. But it's Cook. Mm-hmm. They trying to use PS Exec. That don't make sense. Let's go check out their account activity. Yeah, exactly. And so that's why that acts is like, you always seeing somebody trying to elevate privileges, whether it's on any system, Windows, Linux, or somebody's account gets breached, and now they trying to do lateral movement, seeing what they can get into with this person's access. Yep. Like, no, you're totally right, man. But I know I've seen you talk about a couple of things when it comes to IAM, and so we'll do this part. It's kind of like some more of the informational stuff. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about these next questions will be, okay, if somebody was trying to do entry level, what type of salary they could possibly expect? And granted, we know that goes, you know, on a lot of things as far as company, what area you're in, you know, whatever other type of expertise you may have, but like a general ballpark number.
We
also want to go into what they would need to do to, you know, try to pivot into IAM as well. Yeah. And then what are some of the, what should they do? And then what should they learn? Cause I've seen, you've been talking about, if I don't want to butcher it, but I'm gonna say is it ping one, ping federation?
Yeah. So ping federate, ping one, they got a whole bunch of, it's ping identity. And they have a whole bunch of products. That's one of the areas I focus on, but yeah, we can definitely talk about it, man. I guess we could talk about salary, man. So, I mean, of course, with everything, it depends on the company, depends on the location, depends on what you're looking at. Are you talking about somebody that is brand new to IAM? Or are you talking about somebody who's a
brand new person?
Brand new.
Let's say, for instance, I have a client right now. She's been in banking for 10 years. But, you know, even when you come to banking and stuff like that, you're looking at, you know, they might flag something because the transaction looks, you know, unusual.
Yeah. So she's probably already got experience with provisioning accounts, different things like that. You know what I'm saying? So she would probably be able to transition well. Honestly, even if you don't have a background, you can find entry level. When I say entry level, I'm talking about entry level positions. Easily around 60, 70, 80,000 just to come into a corporation and manage, like I said, manage building access or manage system access. And they'll teach you, you know, whatever system they're using. They'll say, hey, this is what we use. And basically, you may just be sitting there helping people reset passwords. How many people do that on the service desk right now? That's still IAM, but you may get hired just to do that. At an entry level, you don't need a whole crazy background. You don't need a lot of degree. You don't need degrees or certifications or anything to know how to reset somebody's password. I would say the main thing to learn, especially if you want to go corporate, is to make sure or try to get familiar with Active Directory. You know what I'm saying? Because that's a lot of what you're going to be doing. Active Directory stuff, like I said, even if you're just on service desk, even if you're just on the phone and you're not going anywhere, you're resetting people's passwords, you're resetting people's accounts. That's IAM. You know what I'm saying? That's a very, very, very easy way to get an entry into IAM with no prior experience. Just look for somebody that's looking for access to help people with account management. You know what I'm saying? I think a lot of times people don't realize how broad IAM can be and what you could be doing. So yeah, I would say if you could get some hands on with learning Active Directory, Azure Active Directory, you know, some of those things like that, right. Or even just if you're looking at job descriptions and you see they use certain things, like maybe they use Workday or maybe they use PeopleSoft or maybe people are using Salesforce. All those applications require account access management. So you can even niche, if you're familiar with Salesforce, you can niche down into that and be like, hey, you understand how to provision and manage people's access in Salesforce or provision and manage people's access in PeopleSoft. All these HR systems, it's all still access management. You know what I'm saying? So it's I think it's a little bit easier to transition or get started in IAM because it's so broad and because the levels are so, there's so many levels to it. Like I said, if you're just doing basic account and password resets, you're in IAM and you can definitely parlay that into more stuff, you know?
Yeah. I've had a couple of episodes where we talked about that when it came to help desk. We were changing password. Well, first we used to use, was it NetIQ or something like that? I forgot what we used. Used the tool that they used to connect into AD, and then they just let us right into Active Directory. So going into AD and doing stuff with, you got like group mailboxes, you got network share drives, you got if you're feeling a request to give these people this different access to these different things, you know? So a lot of times they don't know that they are doing a lot of identity access management and that a lot of people in help desk, like I have people right now on my latest YouTube video saying like how they're stuck in help desk and they don't know what to do. And I just always, when I have clients, I just always assess what they have then. And I say, I'll show them on LinkedIn and say, hey, you're doing this now. You could do this. You just have to sell it, you know, in your interviews and on your resumes that you know how to do it.
It's all about the terminology. So you'd be like, oh, I reset people's passwords all day, or I help people set up MFA on their phones. You know, I do this, and that. That's huge. And IAM, you could definitely parlay that into, you know, I manage access to MFA. You know what I'm saying? I manage access to Active. Like, it's all in how you word it and understanding what the actual job is, like what the actual job and the duties are. So a lot of people that are in help desk or service desk are already doing IAM. The IAM is one of the first things you learn when you get into IT. You know what I'm saying? When you get on the help desk, you get on service desk, one of the first things you learn how to do is reset somebody's password. You know,
you know, even on the other hand, like even the background information, hey, making sure who I'm talking to is that person, making sure their stuff makes sense in there, making sure that, hey, if they do need to reset, you know, the MFA password is the stuff that they have in there. Can they get that code to where it needs to go?
Yeah. A lot of people are doing it, man, and don't realize it. So yeah, if you're on service desk, help desk, and you're doing that stuff, you're definitely not stuck, because you can definitely parlay that experience into a more broader or more advanced IAM role. But like I said, even if somebody's coming from banking or HR or any other situation, there's still transferable skills. Like I said, even if you're just somebody who manages, if you're just managing building access, that's still access. You're still managing access. If you're a security guard and you're just checking somebody's ID, you know, are they supposed to be in this building? Let me check your ID. But that's still access management. It's physical access management, but it's still transferable because you understand the mindset of verifying somebody's identity. So it's a lot of ways to get into it, man. And like I said, for me, it's fun to me. Like it's fun because there's so many tools, there's so many technologies and things that cross over, and we can get into that a little bit later, but man, it's anybody can get into it. I'm gonna be honest, like, you know, you just gotta look at where you're at. It's definitely a way to get in there.
Definitely. And since you said that, let's segue into, maybe you already mentioned Active Directory, but what's some other tools that are, because I like now how the industry is going, especially with like introduction of the cloud and some of these other platforms.
Yeah.
It's the barrier entry is not as bad as it used to be. Like still some stuff you can't get access to because you have to work somewhere and do it. But so many other places are letting you download these tools and learn them on your own free time. So what would be some like that you could recommend?
Man, it's a lot. It's a lot of these tools are going cloud-based, and a lot of these companies will allow you to set up a trial. You can set up a trial cloud experience with, like, for me, one of the main tools that I manage is Ping Identity. So they got like Ping Federate, they got Ping One, they got Ping One S, they got all these different tools, but a lot of them you can set up for free on your own. So I have my own sandbox type of account set up at home that I'd use to just play around and try stuff out. But you got things like Beyond Trust, which is, you know, managing your privileged access management, you know, CyberArk, all these different tools that, you know, that people are using. Azure AD is a huge IAM tool. You know what I'm saying? Because you can manage applications in there. You can onboard applications in there. You can set up an Azure account for free. AWS, you know, they have IAM
and they give you $200 for free. What's that? They give you $200 free.
$200 something like that. Azure Google. Core. Yeah, Google Cloud. You can play with. They give you like $300 or something like that. Like even if you were just to go and try to get familiar with this stuff with the big three cloud providers. You know, Azure, AWS, Google Cloud, learning how to integrate applications with those platforms, learning how to manage users, learning about the roles and stuff in there, that will take you a long way because cloud is so huge and so many companies are integrating into the cloud. And again, IAM is at the foundation of all this cloud access, because now you're talking about people all over the place. So how do you manage access to your tools and stuff that are in the cloud? By using IAM, you know what I'm saying? So definitely, man. Yeah. If I was telling somebody, if they wanted to get started, I would say set up a cloud account, because with any of those cloud accounts, you can learn IAM just in that environment. And that's huge. If you understand how to manage access to AWS or Azure or GCP, you are a very valuable person. You know what I'm saying? If you know the roles and you know, how do you provision access? How do you manage this access? How do you set up password policies? How do you do these different types of things? Oh, we have, you know, we have O365. How do I integrate O365 with this? And a lot of these tools will allow you to walk through it. It'll say, hey, if you want to onboard this app in here, this is how you do it. So setting up free accounts with at least one cloud provider, and then like try to do things like one login or Okta or Ping or any of these password management tools, these SSO management, a lot of them all give you free trials because they're cloud environments. It's not like you have to download any software, you know what I'm saying, if you don't want to. Most of all these tools are in the cloud. So you could set that up and just learn how to integrate those things. Man, you'd be valuable.
Yeah, man. And that's why I tell people, like, you know, I think the approach a little bit now to change people's, like, hey, if you're not trying to just necessarily go a help desk route, you can learn some material in A+, but I don't recommend it. I would recommend, you know, a Network Plus, then like an entry level cloud cert, because you learn about all the different services. And I always recommend that foundational cloud cert. Like I got practitioner and I have fundamentals, and I could probably go past that if I choose to, but I work on different skills in my pastime. But I tell people to go for those because I know a lot of times they say, well, you know, that solution architect looks sexy or whatever. But if you skip that fundamental one, you may not know all the different services that's out there. You might want to just specialize in one.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
And especially when you go with IAM.
Yeah.
If they got the different labs that'll walk you through it, and then you can just start building off of what you learned in the lab and just start doing stuff. That's really what I do. I build off of it.
That's it. And the labs are, you're actually doing it. Like if you go set up an AWS account and you follow the recommended, you know, best practices, you're going to have to set up IAM and you have to set up a proper IAM and policy just for yourself. Just for yourself, you have to set up, because they're like, you know, you shouldn't be accessing this with your root account. You should be setting up a user. That's IAM. You know what I'm saying? So you're going to have to do that off top. You know,
yeah, so, man. And it's funny that you say that, because that used to be alerts like, hey, somebody just logged on as root. And so, yeah, like, man, who is this? And it, you know, and that's the thing too. What people don't know is that, hey, you know, we seen the log. It's going to show us in that ARN who the person that was actually using root. So I can go figure out who it is.
Yeah.
So, yeah, man, I think I like, I guess I am with fit in what, governance or compliance, or would it be in all three? Honestly,
it's honestly, man, it's all of that. It depends, like, and that's why it's so, because think about, you know, like governance, managing, you know, just the whole life cycle of a user, making sure that's governed properly. Like, what happens when they get onboarded? What happens when they move positions? What happens when they leave? Yeah, because is the account still out there? Is it still set? You know, saying all those different things, right? Or compliance. How many people have access to this type of data? You know what I'm saying? How many people have access to this tool that has access to this type of data? Can you run a report on that? Can I get a report to see how many admins we have here? Or, like, it covers so much. You know what I'm saying? So it's so many different ways. If you want to get into IAM and you don't want to be super technical, you can still do it from a governance or a policy perspective. You know what I'm saying? If you don't want to be hands on and you want to, like you said, go more the governance route or the compliance route, you could still have an IAM background for that. You could be somebody that just goes through and checks their cloud environments to make sure that, you know, people aren't accessing things as root. Make sure that people don't have stale credentials or keys or private keys out there. Make sure things are being rotated. All these different types of things. And again, that's why I love IAM, because it's so wide and there's room for everybody. You know what I'm saying? And the knowledge that you have, even just from a people management perspective, can translate, you know, even if you've never done anything technical. If you understand managing people and managing access to things, then you can definitely thrive in IAM, man. And there's definitely more technical side of it. Definitely more technical side of things that we can get into that if you want to. But it would fit in all that.
No, I think we can do another like part two or some
more
technical stuff, because I think we've piqued a lot of interest today on IAM, this part of IAM for people, because if we start getting into the weeds, well, they might get lost in here, and not know what's going on.
Yeah,
but I just feel like IAM is like a field that, you know, doesn't get talked about enough, but that's vital to any organization. And that a lot of people, like you said, can do. And I just like the push for, like, I'm seeing more and more IAM engineer roles and stuff like that on LinkedIn. And I think that's pretty dope. But
what you think about, you think about all the breaches that we're having now. You think about people, working remotely is becoming more normal for more and more people. Well, how do you think all that gets managed? It's through IAM. You still got, you know what I'm saying? Like, because you gotta be able to make sure that the people who's accessing your network from wherever, are they who they say they are? You may start a position and the person may never come in physically for you to identify who they are. So how do you do that? What's the process behind that? How are we gonna get the I-9 documents? You know what I'm saying? How are we gonna do all that? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
may have to. So.
And sometimes, look, companies that do meetings figure, hey, man, it's a different person that I interview. Like,
facts.
It's a lot of stuff going on with that. You know, I've talked about it enough on previous podcasts.
Yeah. But
I'll touch on something you said in the beginning. It's like, hey, you got back into the swing of things because you also want a second win, but to show people that it doesn't matter your age, you can still, you know, come back and do this. What would be something else that you would add to people? Because I do get a question. I've seen questions sometimes where people ask, like, hey, are they too old to do this and that? And I would say, like, no. Like, I know, you know, pending people, you know, that may be, you know, a little older than me that decided this is what they want to do now. I'm like, no. I'm like, because the industry never stops expanding. So it's not like, as long as you have, I tell people all the time for, like, doing anything technically, as long as you have the will to keep on, like, learning new stuff or whatever, you can fit in anywhere.
I mean, that's it, bro. Like, that's perfect. Like, there's really nothing else to say. And I think sometimes, man, with certain industries, we think there's an age thing. And for whatever reason, sometimes people think tech is a young person's game, but tech is everywhere. You can't go anywhere without running into technology. So it's like, if you want to learn it, if you want to do it, do it. Like there's no age limit. You know what I'm saying? Like you have people at 65 retired and now they want to, you know, transition into technology and they're learning. They may want to learn how to code. They may want to learn cybersecurity. It doesn't matter. If you want to learn it, do it. And there's so many resources out here for you to be able to do it now that it doesn't matter how old or how young you are. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like you can get it. You can get it.
Yeah, man. Yeah, and as long as you can grasp it and keep on getting better, that's really what matters. I've worked with some people whether young or old that, you know, just decide, hey, they're just gonna be the way they is and not change, and you know, that's the issue. So it really don't have an age on it. Pretty much like you said. But I guess and because we're gonna start closing out this episode. Outside of that, for the listeners, what would be two or three things that you could leave them with? You know, if they are a person who probably is identifying like with you, like kind of want to figure out, hey, what do I want to do? Like, what are some things that you want to probably reiterate for them to do to figure out what they actually want to do in tech?
Man, you got to be honest with yourself. Don't just go after what you think looks sexy and what everybody else is saying is where you need to be. Like, you got to be honest with yourself. As much as I like pen testing, the idea of it, or reverse engineering code and all these different things, I had to be honest with myself. I don't have a coding background and I don't know that it necessarily interests me. So I didn't want to go that route. Do I want to be looking for breaches all day? Not necessarily. You know what I'm saying? Because that's a different, you already know, that's a whole different level of, hey, something happened. We on this thing for 36, 72 hours straight. You know what I'm saying? So you got to think about how you want your career to be, what type of work you want to do. You got to be honest with yourself. Like I said, take evaluation of yourself and look at the things that you like. And I guarantee there's going to be something within tech that fits your skills and the things that you want to do on a daily basis. Don't just look at the money first. You know what I'm saying? Because if you do that, you can find yourself in situations that you just don't enjoy. You know what I'm saying? Cause sometimes you can find them jobs that pay a lot, but you may not want that. You know what I'm saying?
That's me right now.
Yes. I mean, but you have to go through that and you find that out. Like, that's just part of the game, man. So yeah, if you could spend some time and try, and sometimes it takes experiencing something to know that that's not what you want to do. So don't feel bad if you don't figure it out and you get into a situation that you don't like, because guess what? As long as you wake up and you got breath, you can change that. You can do something different. You know what I'm saying? So I would say the most important thing, man, is just to try to find something that aligns with your skills and not worry about what everybody else is doing. Like I said, for me, IAM ain't seen as sexy. It ain't seen as, you know, they ain't doing movies about IAM engineers. You know what I'm saying? But at the end of the day, we are the foundation of everything. Anything that's trying to be breached, anything that's trying to be hacked, anything that is trying to be compromised, it comes down to the IAM. Either the IAM program or the tools have failed, or the education around IAM has failed to where people have, you know, given up their credentials, you know, all these different things. So for me, at the end of the day, I don't care what you're doing, whether you're trying to access a switch or you're trying to access a computer, you're trying to access a server, you still got to go through the IAM team.
Man, look, definitely. And I just want to throw in, even once you go past IAM, even for people, you know, like we had platform engineers that are, you know, engineers for like the platform of Splunk, or we use CrowdStrike, or Tanium, EPO. Mm-hmm. They got to make sure we got the right access, because if we got high elevated access than we need to, we could potentially do something bad.
Exactly.
So, yeah, everything is, like I said, it's a circle. I think it goes in together. For the listeners that aren't watching this on YouTube, how could they stay in contact with you if they had any other questions about IAM, or they want to watch you do something related to IAM? How can they see that?
Yeah, for sure. On LinkedIn, JK Swopes, JKSWOPS. And then my website, JKS Tech Lab. And I'm JKS Tech Lab on Instagram, JKS Tech Lab on Twitter, JKS Tech Lab on YouTube. And for me, YouTube is just about just sharing some things about IAM, things that I think would be helpful, things that I'm not finding or seeing information about. So I may get into the weeds a little bit on certain things, but there are people out there that are looking for that. You know what I'm saying? So, yeah, I got some videos up there if you want to check it out to kind of see some of the stuff that we do when I'm talking about connecting things to different cloud environments and stuff like that. And you may find it interesting. Like I said, it's a lot of us out here that are doing it. There's conferences out here just for IAM people. We exist. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes you don't really think about us. We try to stay out the way. But yeah, if you're using MFA, if you're using SSO, if you're logging onto the network, like everything you're doing in your job went through IAM at some point, you know, you wouldn't be able to access what you're accessing. So from password policies, all that stuff.
Yeah, man. So, man, I think this has been another dope, informative episode, especially for the people. I think they'll get a lot of value out of this. I will have all his links and descriptions in the description as well, so you can just reach out to him and tap the button. If you're watching this on YouTube, you know what to do. Make sure you like it, share it out. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, follow us, leave a thumbs up, leave a review. Really helps out the podcast, really helps us grow. And also, if you want to donate to the podcast or get on the Patreon, those links will be in the description, because I have some videos that I plan to probably put out just for Patreon and probably not YouTube like for a while. But
dope.
As always, like I say, man, you know, let's stay textual, and I'm out.